Srimad Bhagavatam 6th Canto, Chapter 16, King Chittaketu Meets the Lord, Text 38. Translation. O Lord, O Supreme, unintelligent persons who thirst for sense enjoyment and who worship various demigods are no better than animals in the human form of life. Because of their animalistic propensities, they fail to worship your lordship, and instead they worship the insignificant demigods, who are but small sparks of your glory. With the destruction of the entire universe, including the demigods, the benedictions received from the demigods also vanish, just like the nobility when a king is no longer in power. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita 7:20 says, Kamaistaistaya hitagyana prapadyante nyadevata. Those whose minds are distorted by material desires surrender unto the demigods. Similarly, this verse condemns worship of the demigods. We may show our respect to the demigods, but the demigods are not worshipable. The intelligence of those who worship the demigods is lost. Hrithagana, because these worshippers do not know that when the entire material cosmic manifestation is annihilated, the demigods, who are the department heads of that manifestation, will be vanquished. When the demigods are vanquished, the benedictions given by the demigods to unintelligent men will also be vanquished. Therefore, devotees should not hanker to obtain material opulence by worshipping the demigods, but should engage in the service of the Lord, who will satisfy all his desires. Akama sarvakamova mokshakama udarati jivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Whether full of all material desires, free from material desires, or desiring liberation, a person who has broader intelligence must, by all means, worship the supreme whole, the personality of Godhead. This is the duty of a perfect human being, one who has the shape of a human being, but whose actions are nothing but those of an animal, is called Natapashu, or Dvipada Pashu, a two-legged animal. A human being who is not interested in Krishna consciousness is condemned herewith as Narapashu. Om Gana Chimanandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasati Gaur Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. Verses about demigod worship. I remember here in Los Angeles, it must have been about 76 or 77, at the BBT working on Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavatam, including this canto. And I was wondering, all these verses about demigod worship, how does it really apply to society? It sounded like some exotic thing from India that would have no relevance to the USA or the First World. So, at that time, of course, in ISKCON, the massive influx of devotees from India had not started. The massive Indian congregations that we see on Sunday, they hadn't started. So, naturally, the way it works in this world, because this world is the kingdom of Maya. Maya means not only that which is not, but also that which can be measured. So we're always trying to size things up with our senses and analyze things based on what we can perceive. So, what we could perceive back then was the non-relevance except in India, of verses about demigod worship. That's just something strange they do in India. Because, after all, the Western world has a very strong monotheistic tradition. There's one God, and then there's nothing else. Sometimes some religions throw in some angels to add some variety. But otherwise, it's just clear. There's the one God and nothing else, but demigods. All right, they're into that in India. And, of course, by reading Srimad Bhagavatam, we all acknowledge the existence of the devas. It made total sense that we live in a cosmos of nested hierarchies of consciousness. The little consciousness is contained in a world that's supervised by bigger consciousness. And that bigger consciousness is contained in a world that's supervised by even bigger consciousness. And ultimately, there's a supreme consciousness that is on top of everyone and includes all the nested hierarchies of consciousness underneath. And yes, it made perfect sense that there are personalities in charge of all the departments of nature. And it's not just some kind of primitive animism where some natives, aboriginals, are worshiping a tree god or a river god. The Bhagavatam explains the various levels of consciousness. And an increase in consciousness leads to an increase in knowledge and capacity to do things. So human beings are not the last word in consciousness. Their consciousness is fully developed, meaning that with the human consciousness, you can understand the Supreme Absolute Truth. But the demigods, their consciousness is more expanded in that they can control aspects of material nature. So we accepted that by reading Srimad Bhagavatam and becoming purified. But nevertheless, the relevance of repeating verses about the demigods, one should not worship the demigods, we couldn't see how that would ever have any application outside of India. So I remember, it was about 76 or 77, asking Jayadvaita, who's a brahmachari then, Jayadvaita Maharaj was a brahmachari then, so I said, you know, what's the application of all these verses about the demigods? You know, we just don't see any trace of that, in the USA. So I always remember what he said. He said, Prabhupada, he has put everything in his books for the present and the future. Demigod worship may not be a big thing as in the world we encounter right now, but it very easily could be in the future. And of course, what happened in the future, in the very near future, we had a massive influx of Indian congregation, and of course they knew all about demigod worship. Many of them, in order to get the visas to the USA, had gone to the temples to pray to the demigods. So they knew all about it. And then something else happened years, decades ahead that we could have never predicted. The Western world is getting into demigods. The yoga schools are making kirtan parties, glorifying the demigods. I was going somewhere in Australia, and I saw all these young people, and they each one had one of those colorful T-shirts, you know, imprinted T-shirts, and each one had a different demigod on his T-shirt, and they were all talking. I'm into Brahma. Who are you into? No, I'm into Indra. I'm into Durga Ma. I was just shocked. So Srila Prabhupada's books are so insightful. Yeah. We don't There's so much that our little brains don't acknowledge, but in the pages of these books, we'll find the sum total of human existence so that we can deal with it and help people to be Krishna conscious. So, people like power. They may not worship the demigods, per se, but you'll see in the Western world, people are attracted to powerful persons in finance, in sports, in politics. Powerful displays of the opulences of wealth, strength, knowledge, renunciation, fame, beauty. You're attracted to that. And even if you know someone who knows someone who has those opulences, you feel good about yourself. I was just thinking last night, I was visiting my Toyota brother, and he dropped me off here at the temple last night, and he proceeded on his way to represent Toyota at the meeting in Los Angeles of the Democratic governors of the USA. He said, I've got to be there, and because after all, you know, we may want to build a plant in their state, and we do expect some tax benefits and so on. So it's all about relationships. So there's no doubt. There's a sense of you have tapped in to the inner core of the universe. Power is attractive. And when you know persons who are wielding power, you feel like, my life is worth something. So, what about this sentence in the translation? With the destruction of the entire universe, including the demigods, the benedictions received from the demigods also vanish, just like the nobility when a king is no longer in power. So in democracy as it is these days, when a particular person goes out of office, then all his entourage goes out of office too. All the cabinet, all his bureaucrats, everyone has to change places to make way for the new political party, and they're people who are being rewarded for supporting their man during the election. So it's the same principle as stated here, just like the nobility when a king is no longer in power. But what's wrong, we will think, with benedictions lasting the duration of the entire universe? So what if the demigods are vanquished, and that means the benedictions they give are also vanquished at the time of a cosmic annihilation? We would settle for that, right? Just see how high the Bhagavatam standard is. And just see how miserly we are. We would easily settle for material opulence that would last, what, 5 years? 10 years? That's great. What to speak of the duration of the entire universe? That's something you can really sink your teeth into and bet your life on. Material gratification that lasts that long. We're so desperate, just give us a few years. Just let the economy grow again until we leave this world. And then our children can sort it all out after that. This is how desperate we are for material enjoyment. As the verse says, Vishaya Trisha, eager to enjoy sense gratification. Never mind how long it lasts. This is the Kali Yuga standard. Just give me a few seconds. Just give me a weekend. One night. I'll be happy. That's why the Shastra says, Kripana, misers. We expend our human form of life for such trinkets, such temporary flickering phenomena known as material pleasure. Now, consider the standard of the Bhagavatam. It's talking about material benedictions that are vanquished at the end of the material cosmic creation. And it's putting that down. Only a fool would go for that. This is how high Srimad Bhagavatam is. It's detoxing us from our attachment to powerful persons. The real power is the ability to get out of material existence. That's the sign of real intelligence. So what IQ test measures that ability? Can you get out of material existence? Do you know the science, the art, the culture for getting out of material existence? This is what the Bhagavatam is placing value on. Of course, to actually get out of material existence, we have to please Krishna. So the Bhagavatam is not simply presenting negativity. The only way you get out of the negative existence of material life is by attaching yourself to the supreme positive through the positive process of bhakti. This verse is also very judgmental. It has the Sanskrit term nutapashava, man-like animals. This may sound very severe until we can understand the actual woeful condition of human society today. Until we can actually appreciate how fallen human society is today, we'll wince a bit when we read things like that. Man-like animals. One who has the shape of a human being, but whose actions are nothing but those of an animal, is called nutapashu or dvipadapashu, a two-legged animal. A human being who is not interested in Krishna consciousness is condemned herewith as a nutapashu. We don't know if we want people to read this. Prabhupada is giving us an opportunity to do service by actually educating people how this is so. Once people understand what is the real standard, once devotees understand what is the real standard of human civilization, then they can appreciate all these judgments the Bhagavatam makes. But the Bhagavatam is not some kind of fundamentalist book that's just saying anyone who doesn't believe is an animal. It's presenting the full gamut of of existence, and you can see the various levels from animal life to human life to demigod life to the supreme personality of Godhead and life with the supreme personality of Godhead in the spiritual world. You can see the whole range. The Bhagavatam takes away all your sense of cosmic dislocation, and you can actually see how you fit into the scheme of things. And that's very special knowledge. You can see where you're at and where you should be going. Just like you're working a job in some corporation, you can see the various levels above you, and you can see the levels below you, so you know how you're placed. And if you want to try to rise on the corporate ladder, you know what you have to do, who's ahead of you, who you have to please, who you have to flatter. One of my godbrothers, who retired from the corporate world, told me that. He said, when you're low on the corporate ladder, the number of persons you have to flatter, I use another term, which by the way, the number of persons that you have to flatter is many. The number of persons are many. But as you rise on the corporate ladder, the number of persons you have to flatter reduces, but the size of the ego of the person you have to flatter increases. So the number of persons as you rise decreases. You don't have to flatter so many people. But those one or two persons above you, their ego is massive. So that makes up for, you know, the less numbers of persons. So he said that is the principle of success. You have to just deal with it one way or another. Either it's the numbers of persons or it's the size of the ego. So, you can see through Srimad Bhagavatam where you're at. And you can have a full picture about how human life is being wasted. The demigods are not exempt from wasting their life. That's why in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the demigods pray that if we have any good karma, any punya left over in our bank accounts, we want to take birth on earth. Because life as a human being is much more advantageous for going back to Godhead. The life is so short. You can go back to Godhead after basically a few years. Just see, we're thinking, make the material gratification experiences longer. And the demigods are thinking, give us a shorter life like humans so we can go back to Godhead quickly. Not only that, but the demigods say that life on the heavenly planets, it's too intense in terms of material pleasure and gratification. We can't focus properly on going back to Godhead. You see, there's a way to go back to Godhead through the heavenly planets, on up to Brahmaloka. And then at the time of the end, the time when the universe ends, those who are on Brahmaloka, Lord Brahma's planet, they go back to Godhead with Lord Brahma. So the demigods, however, say, we are not taking that option. Life is too sensuous on the heavenly planets. We're bewildered. Better we take birth on earth where there's mixed happiness and distress. And that way, in a short human form, we can go back to Godhead so easily. Remember the Bhagavatam presentation in the sixth canto about Indra, who disrespected Brihaspati, the spiritual master of Indra and the demigods, because Indra was overwhelmed by material opulence. This is an underlying principle of spiritual knowledge, that material opulence is dangerous unless it's engaged completely in Krishna's service. One has to be very mindful. So Indra made a big slip up. He was seated on his throne, surrounded by all kinds of heavenly planets extravaganza, because he's the king of heaven. All sorts of beings from the heavenly planets, demigods and Upadevas, sub-demigods, were surrounding him. The Gandharvas were singing and dancing, and the musical instruments were being played. And above his throne was a canopy as effulgent as the moon. And his wife was sitting on the throne with him. What a scene. You might say, oh, that's the life. Then what happened? Brihaspati walked in. But Indra didn't pay him any attention, even though that's Indra's guru. Indra not only didn't welcome him, Indra didn't rise up from his seat to greet him, and Indra didn't even offer him a seat. This is how intoxicated Indra became with his prestige and luxuries. So Brihaspati just walked out. Now, the Bhagavatam points out that Brihaspati could have cursed Indra, but he didn't. He just left. So Indra immediately understood he had made a great mistake. And he began to condemn himself. He expressed his regret publicly in the assembly of all these demigods and sub-demigods. He began to condemn himself. Oh, what have I done? And he said something very interesting. He said, what's the use of having all this opulence if there's the danger that I'll make an offense as I just did? Better I not have this opulence if this is what it comes to. So he's lamenting publicly like that. And then he left his royal court to go find Brihaspati, but he couldn't find him anywhere. Brihaspati had disappeared. So you might say, why didn't Brihaspati acknowledge Indra's immediate regret, a public statement of regret? Such a prestigious person as Indra is publicly in front of all his subjects announcing that I made a huge mistake. But you see, life on the heavenly planets is such that you're supposed to know certain things. And evidently, although Indra publicly regretted, Brihaspati wanted to teach a further lesson. But just remember, Brihaspati could have cursed him, but he didn't do that. So it's not that Brihaspati was being cold and indifferent to Indra's public statement of regret. He didn't curse Indra. But he, in dealing with his disciple, obviously felt that Indra needed to learn a lesson that he wouldn't forget. So Indra knew when he couldn't find Brihaspati anywhere. He knew we're going to lose all our power, we're going to lose all our potency. Our guru, we can't find him anywhere. So Indra was publicly in a very pitiable condition. He was beat down. And meanwhile, the demons, who were always defeated by Indra, they got word through their intelligence sources. Indra offended his guru. He's totally uninspired and lifeless. Shukracharya, the guru of the demons, he advised him, now is the time to strike. The demigods headed by Indra will have no potency. Their guru has abandoned them. Now it's time to listen to me. So the Bhagavatam pointed out that generally the demons don't listen to their guru. But Shukracharya convinced him, now's the time. Boys, listen to me right now. We got a good thing going here. Indra has really made a huge mistake. So they listened to him. And they worshipped him very vigorously. Shukracharya specializes in karmic activity. So he saw the material ramifications. He doesn't see spiritual. He sees material ramifications. This is like a very auspicious time for the demons to accomplish their purposes. So the demons attacked and severely thrashed the demigods. And in a very wounded condition, the demigods approached Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma frankly told them, look, this is the effect of insulting your guru. This is what happens. And let me tell you, the effects of this mistake that Indra has done is so, the effects are so great that the demons could actually take Brahmaloka from me. Perhaps Brahma was being a bit dramatic, but he was emphasizing how deadly are the effects of insulting a person like Brihaspati. The demons have become so powerful due to this weakness and their strength in dedication to Shukracharya that they might take away Brahmaloka from me. So in this way, he was shaking the demigods up. Don't do this again. Don't you understand? And then Brahma gave them a solution that they should approach a certain priest. Brahma warned them that this priest has a soft side for the demons, but this is the solution. In that way, Brahma is showing that dealings in this material world are always intricate, and the demigods had got themselves in a difficult material situation, and there wasn't a clear-cut material solution, because there never is. The solution that Brahma gave him, he pointed out, there's a downside to it. You just have to keep that in mind. That's the way it is in material life. There's always a downside to everything. So the demigods took up his word and tried to fix the situation. So there's very interesting statements by Srila Prabhupada in the purports to this history that actually, I was astonished when reading these statements this morning. He's actually laying out the preaching focus for the USA. He particularly mentions America, like purport after purport. And what does he say? Just like the Indra and the demigods who focused on material opulence. Now we would say in contemporary lingo, focus on economic expansion. Instead of producing persons of ideal character, because of that focus on economic expansion, instead of producing persons of ideal character, there is chaos. And people are wondering, how are they going to manage? So we can see that, especially these days. How are you going to manage a country when everyone has been so addicted to the hope of constantly getting more and more sense gratification, more and more money, more and more prosperity? They'll be so angry when they don't get that. You can hold on for a year or two. All right, we've hit a temporary bump in the road. My brother was telling me last night. I asked him, how's Toyota doing? Oh, we had a great month last month. The best we've had in years. Now, all that needs to happen is that the European economy doesn't fall apart. And that's a big if. And this is what people consider, this is the good life. Yeah, we had a great month last month. Now, there's a huge crisis in Europe, and we don't know whether it's going to be solved, but all we need is just everything to keep going like that, and everything will be fine. This is not prosperity. This is anxiety. This is a headache. But the modes of material nature, particularly Tamaguna and Rajaguna, force us to accept this kind of existence as happiness and peace and prosperity. Everything will be fine as long as, it's a long shot, but as long as the banks over there don't collapse, then yeah, we'll keep doing good. And it's madness, actually. But what else can you do? What else can you settle for, you know? Should you just admit the whole thing is a mess? And you can't do that. So you've got to hope against hope. Maybe just a few more years, things will hold together. We don't consider that to be real human life. And the Bhagavatam is trying to educate people in this way. The Bhagavatam doesn't even consider, as we said, benedictions that last the duration of the universe. The Bhagavatam just kicks them out the door. This is how high the standard of the Bhagavatam is. And we are presenting this standard in the lowest of times, because that is Lord Chaitanya's program. So Prabhupada was speaking. He mentions America. If America, just like Indra regretted, if America will regret its emphasis on economic expansion and lack of developing persons of ideal character, and if America will listen to the representatives of Krishna, then it can actually lead the whole world, and the whole world will be better. Another interesting point. I had to read it about 10 times because to make sure I was really reading what I was reading. So Prabhupada explained, the crisis has become so unbearable that nothing else than the standard instructions of Bhagavad Gita will actually make a change. Wait a minute. Nothing else is going to work. The crisis has become so intense, and Prabhupada is talking about the USA, that nothing else than the standard instructions of Bhagavad Gita will make a change. So what shall we say? Well, I don't know. What is Srila Prabhupada seeing in terms of the effectiveness of solutions? Why would he write such a thing that nothing else is going to work? No permutations of the standard Bhagavad Gita program. That's the only thing that's going to make a dent. Because... And you can feel him weighing the situation, weighing the possible solutions, and knowing what we're going to think, and knowing what devotees are going to think now and way into the future. He said, the crisis has become so intense that nothing else will work other than the standard instructions of Bhagavad Gita. It's like a master physician just analyzing disease and saying, just radical surgery is going to do something. He gave hope also that if America listens to the representatives of Krishna after regretting its emphasis on economic expansion rather than developing ideal persons, then it can actually assume its place in leading the whole world. See how glorious is this Srimad Bhagavatam, and especially how it comes to life as transmitted by Krishna's representative, Srila Prabhupada, and the foresight Srila Prabhupada had, knowing all the different ways that devotees could respond to situations. So Prabhupada's just laying out the roadmap. What's going to work? What's not going to work? How severe the disease is? What treatments are necessary? He's considering all that. Reminds me of, you read in the life of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when he was considering various preaching strategies. There was some question about whether he should do a particular preaching strategy or not. And he said, I already had been thinking about that 1,000 births ago. 1,000 appearances, whether it was in my preaching campaign. I already had wrestled with that point. We don't know the persons we're dealing with. This is way over our head. This is the, Srila Prabhupada's guru. 1,000 births ago, I considered this preaching point and made up my mind. 1,000 births ago, during my appearances in this world spreading Krishna consciousness. And here we are. Well, I had some experiences 5 years ago, and yeah, I think I know what to do now. It's humbling to realize how outclassed we are. So I thought it was so profound, this section of Indra's offending his spiritual master, and how Srila Prabhupada used that to give a vision. And I felt it was definitely a vision for, he mentions America particularly, and how it can assume its real world leadership. Otherwise, there has to be regret. We went down the wrong road. We didn't. And Prabhupada he's being non-sectarian. They didn't produce men and women of ideal character. That's a very palatable way to say it. Focused too much on economic expansion, forgot how to produce persons of ideal character. And that will be the only solution. Ideal character, and then the standard instructions as presented in Bhagavad Gita. Hare Krishna, glory to Prabhupada.